Blog Talk Radio.
Today is William Watkins. William.
This is
yes, good evening, John.
Let me introduce myself, and then I'll introduce William more formally. This is Edward X. Young, John Link's co-host. I am a grindhouse horror movie actor, director, makeup effects artist. We also have with us as our producer, but he'll be one of the guest hosts, we have Cameron Scott, who is a filmmaker, writer, producer, director, actor. He made Postmortem America 2021, starring Linnea Quigley and me and John Link and a host of great guest luminaries. But we normally discuss, you know, fantasy on our show. We discuss horror movies and TV shows, fantasy horror. But tonight's a very special, serious show of the John Link Show because we have a serious guest here with a real-life paranormal experience. It's William J. Watkins Jr. is our guest, and he could further describe himself in a moment. I'll let him talk for a while in a moment here, But William J. Watkins Jr., I've known him for 30 years, and he's and I would vouch for him 100%. And he's an actor and an author and a poet and a bit of an ichthyologist and a herpetologist and a paranormal researcher in his own right. And William J. Watkins Jr., while growing up, had the experience of living in a house, which I'll let him explain further, which was plagued with rather dark and malevolent poltergeists. And it's his story. I'll let him tell it. And if he wants to introduce himself further or plug any of his artistic endeavors, he may do that also. But it's quite a story. I'll let Bill William J. Watkins, also known as Billy Jack, take over. And after he tells the story, John Link and Cameron Scott and I will probably have some questions we want to ask you. Mr. Watkins, take over and say what you wish to say about yourself and tell us your amazing and bone-chilling story.
All right. Well, thank you, Mr. Young. It's good to be here, Mr. Link, John, and Cameron. Thank you so much. I just wanted to say some of you might know me from my YouTube videos. I used to be called Billy Jack Watkins by my friends and family when I was younger, and my YouTube videos are Hallowed Eve Escape, Hallowed Eve Escape Part 2, The Revenge of Barbara, and I have some smaller little holiday ones I did, Halloween Ghoul 2014, Scrooge, an excerpt with Billy Jack Watkins, Kojak Kitty, and the director is my good friend Aziza Al-Tawil. She's my best friend in all the world. She's a very, very talented belly dancer, actress, and singer in her own right. And we started shooting Halloween Eve Escape Part 3, The Ballad of Jeff and Barbara. So we're hoping that's going to be the best one yet. But getting to the crux of the story here, I grew up in a house, and I'll even mention that it's in a historic town in New Jersey called Keyport. And lived in that house for about 20 years. During that time, I myself only actually saw the ghost, and I always refer to it as a ghost, once. However, there were many other different types of manifestations, if you will. Almost constant sounds that couldn't be explained, and some other different things that happened. I'm sure that I could get the signatures of people that stayed there with us. Sometimes people, friends of my brother or I, that just stayed for one evening that experienced this this apparition, this terrible thing. I'll tell you, it was really, really paralyzed me with fear. John, I don't know if you have any specific questions, but I'd be happy.
I want to hear the whole story.
I'll ask some of the questions because I want to get to the meat of the story, and John, probably best afterwards. But
okay,
we should establish, I thought it's important to establish, this is an antebellum house, right?
That is correct. The house was built, as I was told, in 1841. Believe it or not, in Keyport, which certainly is not called a resort town now, however, I'm sure in 1841 that it was a very beautiful beach area because the Raritan Bay, believe it or not, was considered to be one of the most beautiful bays on the entire eastern coast of the United States, from Maine to Florida, because of the unique beds of oysters were there that were constantly filtering the water, where the water was so clear it was like bathtub water. And I believe it was America Vespucci that described it that way. A very beautiful area. But in any event, yes, the house was built in 1841 as a summer home, resort home for a very wealthy person. And I'll tell you, talking about the history of the home, when I was a very young boy, an older lady that lived across the street that was born around, I believe, 1890 or so, told me that as a young child, someone told her that the man that built the house, whose last name was Walling, died rather mysteriously in the basement of this house. I'm sure that he died of old age. That wasn't a mystery. But why he was in the basement, people just couldn't figure out. at that time, what he was doing, exactly what he was doing, from what I was told. So they talked about it a lot. And that is indeed where I saw the ghost. It was around, I believe, July of 1970, and I thought about this a lot and tried to remember the closest date that I could. I was awakened by the howling of a large English setter dog that we had, which never howled under ordinary circumstances. The dog never howled. And suddenly I heard footsteps, rapid, loud footsteps coming up the stairs toward my bedroom. I was always all the way in the upper bedroom in the house. And here it was, my brother and his friend, Donald Poling. My brother Curtis A. Watkins, who's passed away. But Curtis and his brother Donald came, and they kept saying over and over again, we saw it, a ghost, we saw it. I'm like, calm down, what happened? There's a ghost down there. I said, come on. There is no such thing as ghosts. You had to have seen a light from the street shining in or something. I said, they're like, well, we saw it. We saw it. Please come down and see it with us. So I went down with them into their bedroom, which was in the basement of the house. It had what they called a Yankee basement, fully, you know, finished off. I went down there with them, and I laid, you know, all three of us in this full-size bed down in their bedroom with the lights out, just laying there, and the to the left of where the bed was were two windows, but they were, the shades were pulled all the way down and the curtains were closed so that barely any light could come in from the street lights or anything. And I noticed suddenly, after lying there for about, I'd say 20 minutes or so, I started to see this sphere of light. And when I first saw it, it was about perhaps the size of a softball. And it was that odd sort of bluish-gray light. The thing that I can say that I think of that it was most similar to, if you remember the light coming from the old black-and-white TV sets when there was no picture on, but just the TV was on, that was sort of that similar color of light, like a bluish-gray almost. And so I saw this sphere of light about the size of a softball, and I said, well, that's odd. I thought to myself, that's odd. I said, maybe it's coming from a spotlight or something coming through the side of the curtains. And I kept looking at it, and suddenly it got to about the size of a basketball. And I noticed now inside of this sphere, there seemed to be almost cloud-like figures swirling around. And just as I noticed that, suddenly it just blew up. It got very large and went into the shape of a person. At that point, I was totally paralyzed with fear, and suddenly my brother and his friend were saying, there it is. And I was like, I know. And this thing to me looked like a hooded figure and slowly came out of the corner of the room that it was in and started to walk towards us in the bed. And it was pointing at us, pointing at me, like as if to say, hey, you. And at that point, I jumped out of the bed, hit the light switch on the way out of the room, and ran up the stairs and stayed there with them on my heels, my brother and his friend Donnie. And we were alone because my parents at the time were in Florida vacationing. So I was the one in charge at 17 years old with my 15-year-old brother and his friend, who was about 15 or 16, Donnie. That was the one time that I saw the ghost. Many, many other times I felt the presence of this ghost. I smelled rose water. I mean, just totally inexplicable. Where this fragrance came from, because nobody wore rose water in our house, and that was a commonly used fragrance back in the days after this house was built. Rose water was very popular. I guess the thing that kind of scared me as much as seeing the actual ghost itself was one day in the afternoon, it wasn't in the wee hours, like when I saw the ghost around 3 a.m. This was right in the afternoon one day. I went down into the basement, into the kitchen or boiler room, as we called it, and here was a ball. It was an old, like an old-fashioned rubber ball, a little larger than a softball, and it was in the air, suspended in the air. And for some reason, it just struck me with terror to see this ball suspended in the air, and I screamed, and the ball fell to the floor and bounced over to the corner, and I ran back upstairs. And this was sometime later, I'd say around 1974 or so. And like I said, I always knew when I was in the basement of that house when it was around, because I could almost feel it touching my back. It felt like somebody took an ice-cold, wet blanket and threw it over the top of me. And I could feel its presence. And like I said, many times I could smell rose water. Now, I must say that was not the first time someone commented on a ghost in the house. I have to say the first time there was comments about a ghost, which we didn't recognize it as anything like anybody talking about a ghost, was my cousin, who said that she thought she saw Abraham Lincoln. Now, this was in one of the upper bedrooms, and this was, I'd say, a few years before I saw the ghost with my brother and his friend in 1970. I believe it was 1970. And so my dad kind of poo-pooed it and said, oh, no, you didn't see Abraham Lincoln. You were just having a dream. Go ahead, you know, back to sleep. Everything's okay. Don't worry about it. Also, many of my friends saw the ghost when they stayed over, and we did not tell anyone. I must emphasize this. We did not tell anyone that there was a ghost in our house for a few different reasons. Number one, because obviously a lot of them wouldn't have come over and stayed with us and had fun and partied and stuff. But also because I didn't want to give them, put the seed, the thought in their minds so they might imagine something. I didn't want to do that. And also I just want to emphasize that never was I under the influence of anything. No alcohol, no drugs, nothing. Everyone was perfectly sober when we saw these things. Also, like I said, many of my friends saw it, many of my relatives saw it, and they only spent one night in the basement there. Recently, my cousins revealed to me, after I had moved out of the house, and I lived in different areas for short times and then moved back, my cousins revealed to me that they stayed in the basement, or were in the basement. I don't think they stayed overnight, but they were in the basement in any event, and all of a sudden they saw the ghost, and it actually pulled an old book out of a bookcase down there and threw it at them, which they ran screaming out the basement exit door into the yard. And I hadn't heard that because I hadn't talked to this particular cousin in 30 years or more, and didn't know about that incident. But my brother, Arthur, had the most terrifying experience with this apparition, with this ghost, and that he had a bedroom that was, the bed was at the foot of the bed was right at the bottom of the door that went into the attic of the house. And one evening, he was sleeping, and suddenly this attic door, which was not hinged, it was just friction fit into the wall, where you had to pull it out and push it in with the use of a screwdriver or something. Suddenly this door was pushed out from behind, from in the attic, on top of him while he slept. And he jumped, you know, he went to jump up, sat up in the bed, went to get up and saw the ghost standing on top of this door. This is what he's told me from the time he was a teenager. Let's put it this way, he was totally terrified by this thing. And like my other brother Curtis, my brother Arthur, I'm referring to my brother Arthur now, my youngest brother, they both left and joined the military not too long after they experienced these things. I tell you, most of the time upstairs, I did not have a problem. You could always hear footsteps. You'd run to the stairs and look to see if anybody was coming. You didn't see them. A lot of times, like I said, you could feel this presence of somebody watching over your shoulder. That's the only way I can explain it. I would say sometime around 1970, I want to say 77 or 76, my mom had enough, and she spoke to a minister that came to the house and said a lot of prayers and threw holy water in practically every room in that house. And when I moved back there again with my family in 1980, it seemed like I did not feel that presence anymore, nor did I experience any kind of, you know, manifestations of any kind. Think about some other things that had happened.
I remembered something, and of course, let me just clarify. This house, I mean, this is the house that you grew up in as a kid, of course, as you're saying. But
yes.
your brother was made to live in a bedroom down in the basement where basically ground zero of the spectral activity was in the basement.
That's correct. My one brother, Curtis, lived in the basement. He had his bedroom down there. He stayed down there as little as possible, obviously. But that's where his bedroom was, and my mom was a kind person and took in a couple of guys to stay with us, Martin Ziokowski, Donald Poling, and another fellow by the name of Larry Giordano. All three of them stayed in that house at different times, and all three of them did see the ghost.
I won't say what the address is, but you told me what it is, and I have driven past this house. I have been told by several psychics and mystics, including my grandfather, who was one, that I have psychic abilities, and I do honestly get bad vibes driving past that house of yours. It gives me the cold willies. But your brother was obviously seeing this ghost long before anybody, and you were a latecomer in seeing it. And your brother probably saw many more spectral experiences manifestations than anybody else.
I don't think my brother Curtis actually saw the ghost before that night. But I'm sure that he heard different things going on. And, of course, the house being built in 1841, even though that was 1969, the house was already 128 years old, so we attribute a lot of the noises to shifting and creaking and different things like that, but you could hear distinct footsteps. And another story I wanted to talk about involved my dad. Now, you never met my dad. My dad was a pro wrestler in 1950. He was a tremendously strong human being. I mean, incredibly strong. He was 6'3", 265 pounds. He had almost 20-inch arms and an over 50-inch chest. Okay, I'm not making this up. And he was afraid of no man. He was a trained boxer out of Newark, New Jersey, and he was a trained professional wrestler when he was a young man. However, he really, and my stepmother could tell you, Louise, he really had a hard time dealing with this apparition. I remember one evening he sat down and he decided on his own that he was going to try to do automatic writing with this ghost. And he sat with the pencil or pen in his hand for a long time, patiently asking this ghost, whom, by the way, we referred to as Mr. Walling, but later discovered that there was indeed an apparition which appeared to be a female as well, the one with the rose water. In any event, he sat doing this automatic writing, and there was a few scribbles, but really nothing happened. So my dad, being the individual person that he was, he started to insult the ghost. Now, this is not a lie or made up. He started to curse the ghost. He said he was going to try to suck him up in the vacuum cleaner, that he was an old, illiterate fool, and that's why he couldn't do the automatic writing, and cursed him. And do you know that later that night, and I'm not making this up, we had two doors in the living room that were the closets, and they were louvered doors. Okay, air could not open and close them. Do you know those doors, after he went to bed, those doors slammed shut and opened, must have been 100 times that night. I mean, it was something like you just wouldn't believe unless you were there. And we almost ended up leaving the house because we couldn't sleep. The doors kept opening and shutting in the living room of the house after my father did that. And my mother, the main thing that scared her was she said it got to a point where my dad would often come home late in the evening because of his work and things, and she could feel the ghost sitting on the bed with her when she laid down. She could feel this weight and feel the presence of the ghost. So that, I have to say, even though I saw the ghost, that experience with those doors slamming shut and opening back and forth all night was probably the most terrifying experience I ever had in that house. And this is the absolute truth. I can probably, like I said, I can probably get, of the people still alive, if they're alive, I don't know who is or who isn't, but I would say I could probably get a list of at least 15 people or more that actually experienced this ghost. So it's not baloney. It's real.
And I have to interject briefly because we are nearing the end of our live broadcast of the John Lake Show. Those of you who are listening worldwide on your computers, it's a half an hour long live. But we continue to record for 15 additional minutes once the live broadcast is over. And any of you who are interested in hearing more of this story, as of tomorrow morning, the entire 45 minutes of the show will be on Blog Talk Radio, the same link that you use to access this, on Blog Talk Radio, the John Link Show. And I'm just going to remind people, if you're searching for it in the John Link archives on blogtalkradio.com, this episode of January 8, 2015, is entitled The Ghosts of William J. Watkins, Jr. And you'll want to hear the additional 15 minutes, but I'm going to give a quick identification of our program. The John Link Radio Show on Blog Talk Radio, the John Link Show, was created in October of 2009 with John Link and Francie Weatherman, who runs the Francie and Friends Show on Sunday nights. John Link is the creator of the program. I joined the program early on. I consider myself the director of the show, yours truly, Edward X. Young. We've had a number of producers over the years. Our current producer right now for the past few weeks is Cameron Scott, who is a Grindhouse independent horror filmmaker who's with us, may have some questions. So Cameron Scott is our producer, and the John Link Show appears on most Thursdays, a half an hour long with the 15-minute after party. And we frequently are joined by our co-host, Don Fellman, and often by our other co-host, Rusty Petchak, and there have been others, too. But in a moment, we are going to segue. You listening live will not hear this anymore, but tomorrow morning, log on to Blog Talk Radio, look for the episode, The Ghosts of William J. Watkins, Jr., and you can hear the extra 15 minutes, and there's much more things we have to discuss. And I'm sure that our co-hosts, Cameron Scott and John Link, and our main host, John Link, will have some questions to ask. I was going to ask one question before they take over, and I believe you told me, Bill, that even though there was an informal exorcism, so to speak, of this house with holy water. With holy water, I wonder if it was a minister or if your mother actually had a Catholic priest come over, if it was holy water. But nevertheless, I believe that you told me that you viewed on the internet a satellite image of your house, and from the satellite image there was something rather strange. I mean, you'd like to elaborate on that. This was recently.
Yes, my friend, the director of the films, I mean, Aziza Altawil, was kind enough to scan and photograph this, this screenshot I did of a I went into Google Earth, and I believe that was, when was that, Aziza? That was January of 2013. Thank you, Aziza. And went in to Google Earth, and I almost fell off my chair. I mean, I said, Aziza, would you look at this? She said, there's the ghost. I said, I cannot believe this. I mean, that to me was almost as terrifying as seeing the ghost in the house, to see this, I mean, vaporous shape of a person outside the house on Google Earth. I mean, what is it? I mean, you can see this photograph on my Facebook page now, under William Watkins. You can see it, where she photographed this picture. I printed a screenshot of this Google Earth image from January 2013. I mean, it's just unbelievable. I don't know what happened in this area of Keyport. And again, the house was built in 1841, like Middletown, and the area that Ed lived in as a teen. It's a historic town. There were a lot of different battles fought there. A lot of different strange things went on over the years. And this particular area of Keyport has some of the oldest standing houses left in the town. There's one even older than that house, a few houses away from it. So I tell you, I don't know how to explain it. And the member of the clergy, as far as I know, was a Baptist minister. And I don't want to get it wrong, but I believe his name was Gregory. That was his last name. He did use holy water. They did believe in using holy water. As far as I know, she did not contact the local Catholic church. It was and ironically, the Baptist church is right across the street from this house. So I don't know what else to say. All I can tell you is that also a friend of mine who's an artist, and I believe he's still living, approached my ex-wife, who was still living in the house up until, I believe, 2009, approached her and asked her if he could please go into the basement again back around 1990, because he wanted to try to capture the ghost on film and or try to record it, and he said he'd even be willing to pay her. And she told him, no, get lost, you're not coming in the house. His name was Thomas Traham. So, yeah, I mean, there was a lot of people affected by this thing, or, you know, really totally terrorized by it, but also fascinated with it. I don't know.
I imagine
what to say, really.
We have about 12 or 13 minutes left. I imagine that both, I'm imagining that John Link and Cameron Scott have questions they'd like to ask you. And we'll let John Link ask the first question. And then we'll have
Sure, go right ahead.
Yeah. Who's living in the house now?
The house was purchased by somebody, and she's renting the house. So I have no idea who's living there now, John. Mm-hmm. I really don't know who the tenants are. It was bought by a lady who refabricated the whole inside of the house, from what I'm told, and made it into a rental property, and also redid the entire landscape of the yard and things like that. So the outside of the house, the appearance is somewhat different than it was back when I lived in it. So I really don't know who the people living there are now.
Wonder if there's still manifestations.
You know what? After that picture, John, that picture from Google Earth showed this thing. And if you go to my page, William Watkins, you're my friend on Facebook, you'll see this thing. And, I mean, it's real. And I accidentally spilled a little bit of coffee on it, but it does not take away from this image, this vaporous-looking thing that's like the shape of a person. I mean, I don't, you know, it's there.
Well, does the picture look anything like what you saw in the basement?
Well, the picture is less defined. What I saw in the basement, to me, looked like a hooded figure of a man, a male. My cousins, one of my cousins told me that they distinctly saw a female ghost that threw a book at them, and they could smell the rose water associated with it. My other cousin, several times, claimed that she saw Abraham Lincoln because of the stovepipe mm-hmm. hat, okay, which goes with that same time frame.
Yeah.
Because, after all, the house was built in 1840, and they were popular during the 1860s, mm-hmm. I believe. So
I don't want to leave Cameron out of the loop. Cameron, do you have a question you'd like to ask Mr. Watkins?
Yes, I've had a similar experience many years ago. I lived in an apartment building. A short version of the story, I heard someone speaking to me in the basement of this apartment building that obviously was not there. And it asked me the simple question of if I knew who David was. And it creeped me out. It very much rattled me to my bones. But I always felt like as long as I lived in that apartment, it kind of stayed with me. Something kind of stayed with me. Once I moved out, I felt somewhat safer or more calm, like whatever presence there was there had left. But my question is, like, after moving from this house and after seeing what you had saw, did you feel, like, somewhat relieved? Did you feel like that presence had left, or did something carry over? I'm just curious, after you left this house, you know, how that...
I'll tell you something, and this is very odd. I did feel relieved. I didn't have that constant feeling of a presence when I went into the basement of the house, and sometimes upstairs, mainly in the basement. I mean, it felt like someone was looking over my shoulder. That's the best way to describe it. And then a lot of times that would intensify where it felt like someone taking an ice cold blanket and throwing it on top of me. But so many of the houses in Keyport are so old. Ironically, the apartment that I moved to in Keyport, and I didn't experience any kind of manifestations there, but people told me that it was also haunted, was a house further down in Keyport, which was like a historic mansion house that actually was very close to the Raritan Bay, much closer than the house that I grew up in. But ironically, I had lived in Cana, Virginia for a while, some years later, only about, I'd say, 9 years ago. And the woman there told me that she felt something sitting on the bed with her when I wasn't there. So, I mean, who knows about these things? I don't know. I don't know if it was associated with these things. I've been told that these spirits or energies can enter into objects and stay there and then come out of the objects. I don't know. I didn't have anything personal, as far as I can remember, that I still had from the days that I lived in that house. Like, I didn't have any personal belongings that I knew of that, you know, were from way back when I still lived in that house. So I don't know. But I do know that the woman that I stayed with in Virginia, and that was about 9 years ago, did mention sometime that there was something that she felt a weight actually on her bed, and she wasn't sure what it was.
If I may interject, Mr. Watkins, this is Edward X. Young. I actually have another friend of yours sitting next to me, Donald Gentile, who's an actor, and actually he's begging to ask you a question. So I'll put Donald Gentile on the phone.
Sure, here. Don.
Hey, Bill, how you been?
Hey, my old boss Pazzo, how's it going?
we all acted in Waiting for Godot together, the three of us.
That's right.
And, and Don played Pazzo. I was directing it, and Bill was lucky. But we are still waiting to get this production on board. But Don, ask your question.
I was talking to Ed about this. He mentioned that you had thought that they were also maybe they could have been a demon. Is that correct or no?
Well, I mean, the thing is, what's the difference between a demon and a ghost? Is one a malevolent spirit? Is one an evil spirit, if you will, or is the other? You know, demons, as you know, don't necessarily have to act in a menacing way. In fact, sometimes they act in a friendly way so that they can deceive people. Is that not correct?
That's true.
There you go. So, I mean, these things did not act, well, I have to say, I don't think they acted really in an aggressively evil way, unless you want to call the one that was walking on top of the attic door that came down on my brother evil. And I'm not saying that the ghost pushed the door out on top of him. That could have perhaps been caused by a gust of wind up in the attic, because the attic was very airtight, and it's possible that a gust of wind, I'm just playing devil's advocate, if you will, caused
right.
that door to pop out on top of my brother, and then the ghost may have just happened to come out after that. I mean, it was totally, totally terrifying for my brother Arthur, who is still alive and in Florida.
But the one, when he pointed at you, what was going through your mind when he pointed at you?
What was going through my mind was, I'm out of here. I mean, you know, I was actually paralyzed with fear for what seemed like forever, but I'm sure it was only, you know, maybe 15 seconds or something. And I'll tell you what.
There's only about 3 or 4 minutes left in the show. I wanted to let our host,
okay.
John Link, ask something else of you,
okay.
if he has something to ask.
Sure, sure.
Let's see. Oh.
Did you have a question, John?
Yeah, I'm curious about what the ghost looked like. Did any of the other people that saw it describe what it looked like to them?
Well, my cousins, that interestingly enough, my one cousin said it looked like Abraham Lincoln to her. I mentioned that.
Yeah.
To me, it looked like a classic hooded specter type ghost. Its face, it looked like a man's face, not particularly handsome, not particularly gruesome, but like a man's face. And it wasn't very well defined, okay? It wasn't real clear to me. To her, she clearly said that this particular ghost looked a lot like Abraham Lincoln and had the stovepipe hat on. To my other cousins, it said it was a female ghost. They said it was dressed like a woman would have been dressed back in that time period, the 1890s or the 1880s or something, with a long dress on, and it just looked like a woman. And, of course, to me, like I said, it looked like this kind of a dim bluish-gray light, like you might have gotten from an old TV set years ago. That's the best way for me to describe it, a bluish-gray.
We have about 2 minutes left on the program.
It sounds like there was two ghosts, a man and a woman.
There were two ghosts, but I only saw one that looked like a male to me. I did not see the female ghost.
Well,
although I always smelled rose water.
Yeah, this guy that died in the basement, did he have a wife?
Probably. I would say so, yeah. Yeah, he was, from what I understand, if it's the same person, he built a lot of homes in Keyport. This man was an architect.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, his name was Walling. We called it the Walling House. We called the ghost, the male ghost, Mr. Walling. That's how we refer to him.
Well, a lot of people in those days wore stovepipe hats. Maybe that's why she thought it looked like Abe Lincoln.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yep.
By the way, you know, we might have you here back, Bill, to discuss ghosts in general and rehash some of these elements. Because it's a pity we're going to go, we'll be logged off in about 60 seconds.
Well, that's fine. Sure. Absolutely. I don't have a problem with that at all. I enjoyed it, and it was great to talk to different folks about it.
I want to give a quick shout-out to one of our faithful listeners who always listens in, young Jeff Hamer in Manchester, New Hampshire, who is fascinated by ghosts, was determined to listen to this program. He's probably going to be listening to this in the archive tomorrow, so I hope he enjoyed the show.
Right. And I just wanted to say also that I am not I am not a herpetologist or an ichthyologist professionally, okay? I'm just an amateur. I'm an amateur, and I'm an amateur paranormal researcher also, but I was always interested in the breeding and raising of different types of lizards and also